And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
You know, over the years, we have had pre-game and post-game shows or segments on the Paracast. In some years, we would do the post-game show where we would talk about the guest you just heard and tell you what you should think about it. Now, lately, we haven't done that. We do mostly a pre-game show where we give you time a week or two to figure out what happened on the previous show, make your comments known, then we express our comments, not just force an opinion on you. I know that some people would prefer the post-game interview where you rag on the guest. I don't think we should do that, Chris.
No, I don't either. You know, people need to listen and make up their own minds. They don't need some sort of Howard Cosell color commentary to kind of force feed our particular personal opinions on people. I think people are bright enough and smart enough to make up their own minds about the quality or veracity of a guest. And I prefer the, you know, our current modus operandi. I would much rather introduce a guest and allow the guest to, you know, formulate any sort of opinion in our listeners' minds for themselves.
Or hang themselves,
yeah. We've been doing pretty good lately, though. We've had some really good quality guests on. I really enjoyed our show with Ben Radford. Jesse Ventura was fascinating. What an amazing guy. You know, I think that the quality of the shows is being appreciated on our forums, too. We've had some real lively debate, and that's a good thing.
Well, in terms of Governor Ventura, the biggest argument is over the Kennedy assassination. It is fascinating how it happened in 1963, folks. Okay, so what is that, 48 years ago? Despite that, they are still debating all the fundamentals, including whether the rifle that Oswald got, whether the one he bought by mail order was perfectly capable of doing those shoots, whether he had the capability. And that's part of the healthy argument. You see it both ways, where Ventura says, well, he's an expert, whereas someone like Oswald was a marksman, which is just enough, as they say. Just enough. Sure. But regardless of that, the point being here that this is something that will never go away. That debate will never end. I think 100 years from now, they'll still be talking about the Kennedy assassination and whether Oswald did it, whether he was part of a conspiracy, whether he was a patsy, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a paranormal event, if you ask me, like Roswell, like 9/11. I think all these things are actually, they're so mysterious and there's so much evidence to point to in either side, on either side of the argument, that I really do. I just kind of dismiss it all and say, oh, they're just paranormal events.
Well, that makes it easy. Do you think a trickster was involved? Since you're the trickster guy. Okay, so Mr. Trickster, tell us, were you responsible for the Kennedy assassination? Did you plan it? Were you there in Dealey Plaza in Dallas?
No, actually, I was in a Safeway, I think, supermarket in L.A. I was about 5 years old. I remember when we walked in, there was a horrible smell in the parking lot. I just kind of dismissed it out of my nose. We were inside shopping, and the announcement came over the public address system in the store that the president had been shot. I remember thinking, wow, everybody's really freaking out about this. And I remember I was so bummed. My little brother and I were so bummed because for the next 3 days, there were no cartoons on TV. It was all these somber funeral processions and people talking, and it just wasn't any fun. I wanted to watch cartoons. Hey, look, people die, you know. That was my attitude. Well, anyway, when we left the Safeway, the cops were crowbarring a trunk open, and there was some, like, dead body in a trunk in the parking lot. Another paranormal event, I guess.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, pretty weird.
Tell
That's
me
one
about
of my
it.
Earliest memories, really strong, vivid memories.
And everyone who was alive that day remembers. I remember going to the post office on my bicycle, okay? Going to the post office, coming back to the house. And I noticed at the post office a somber kind of mood. I said nothing. Came back to the house. My father came back from work. He said, did you know the president was shot? And I hadn't been listening to the radio. I hadn't been watching TV, so I didn't know. So I then turned on the TV. As you say, 3 days. 3 days. Nothing on TV but the Kennedy assassination. But it's like we entered a second reality. You know, we had this reality of innocence that existed before 1963. And then we had this second reality that began with the Kennedy assassination. And I remember in the very early days I started working in radio. I was working for a commercial station in Minnesota, as a matter of fact, the home state of Jesse Ventura. And this was the year that Robert Kennedy was shot. And I heard this on the radio from the large clear channel radio station WCCO in Minneapolis. So I called our station manager, woke him up, and I said, I don't want to tell you what happened, man, but Robert Kennedy was shot. So he ran to the studio, and we turned on the station. It was a day timer. So about an hour before dawn, we get on the air. At sundown, we go off the air. We came on the air, and within 5 minutes, he's on there doing a commentary. That's what I remember.
Well, yeah, those were pivotal events, I think, in American history. And the JFK Jr. Crash, I think, is another example of a potential paranormal event. There's so much controversy surrounding that event. Still, these pivotal events are really important, I think.
It is strange. When these things happen, you don't just say, well, some crazed guy kills the president, or some crazed guy kills a man who would be president. You think of the possibility that he acted in concert with someone else. It can't be simple. It can't be just one lone lunatic. We think of the person who killed John Lennon as one lone lunatic. The person who tried to do in President Reagan as one crazy guy. But these other incidents, it's got to be a conspiracy.
Well, I don't know. The whole Hinckley thing was pretty hinky in my book.
Oh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, look at Hinckley Sr. and the oil wells that he sold to the Bush family. I think 30 empty oil wells that he got quite a few million dollars for. I mean, I don't want to get going on this because I'm just going to get myself in trouble. But if you do your research, you'll find that there are connecting points all over the place with certain families and political power structures in this country that are always lurking about on the periphery around these types of, just the heinous events.
As if they're pulling some strings.
That would be the knee-jerk assumption.
And we don't want to jerk our knees because it gets very painful when you get old.
Yeah, especially my knees.
Well, you do all this climbing and all this hiking and all this exploratory investigation on the scene. You take the tours of the Grand Canyon. Actually, you give the tours. So is that something you just do in a motor vehicle, or do you actually have to do climbing?
Well, it depends on who I'm taking along. Generally, I try to keep it as low impact as possible. And this upcoming trip I'm doing up to the San Luis Valley, though, is going to involve some strenuous activity, but we'll have to see. We're bringing a lot of gear up. We have a new toy that's just got the prototype from MIT that we're going to be looking at gravitons and muon. Possibilities of detecting changes. I'm not sure exactly about the science. I'm going to be up to speed before I am joined by a fellow investigator to go up there and hit some very specific locations that I've always felt had special significance. So we'll have to do a show on that once Rosemary and I get back.
If you get back.
Oh, we'll be back.
You'll
be back.
Taking
a train, too. I love trains.
It's been so long since I've taken a train anywhere. There are no trains here. They do have light rail in the Phoenix area. But it's almost right. Like a above-ground trolley car.
Right.
Not the same thing. Not quite.
Nobody uses.
Not the same thing. This week we bring back for an encore appearance Micah Hanks. He's a paranormal investigator. Has his own radio show, by the way. And in the talking points he sent me, he has some new research into the Mothman episode? Ooh.
Right. Yeah, I can't wait to talk about that. Micah is one of those, one of the few younger generation investigators who I sincerely admire. And the Grayling Report, his website is a must read. He's a very good writer and a very accomplished bluegrass musician, has a great band. It's going to be a real pleasure to have Micah back on the show.
But no bluegrass music. Micah Hanks. Coming up next on
The Paracast.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and ProFlowers is offering an amazing special. 100 stunning blooms for mom, plus a free glass vase for just $19.99. Go to ProFlowers.com, look for the radio microphone in the upper right corner, and enter the secret code MANY. But hurry, this incredible deal expires this Friday. Flower prices will skyrocket next week. Order now from ProFlowers to get huge savings. You pick the delivery date, and it's guaranteed. 100 colorful blooms for mom, sent fresh from the fields, guaranteed to stay fresh and beautiful for at least a full 7 days for only $19.99, and will include a free glass vase with every order. Remember, flower prices can double, even triple Mother's Day week, and this incredible special expires Friday. The only way to get this amazing deal is to visit ProFlowers.com, look for the radio microphone in the upper right corner, and enter the secret code MANY. Go to ProFlowers.com, secret code MANY. That's ProFlowers.com, code MANY.
Are you wondering about your retirement portfolio? Are you confident that the financial advisor is experienced enough to combat climbing interest rates, taxes, and inflation? Stop guessing and go to the expert, Robert Chapman of the International Forecaster. When you subscribe to the International Forecaster, you get Robert Chapman's 45 years of experience and concise investment recommendations. Who needs sugar-coated excuses when you can get the cold hard facts and proven investment leads you can't get anywhere else? For a free introductory copy to Robert Chapman's International Forecaster, subscribe now at theinternationalforecaster.com or call 877-479-8178. Experience the difference. When you subscribe, you can email Robert Chapman directly to obtain investment advice tailored just for you. Don't wait another minute. Subscribe today at theinternationalforecaster.com or call 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178.
This is an urgent message. Urgent if you care about feeding your family. S-510 has passed through Congress and will make the sale of heirloom seeds difficult. Prices of non-GMO seeds are skyrocketing and may be hard to afford in the future, if you can even find them. As the economy continues to decline, this will make the heirloom seeds worth their weight in gold and one of the best barter tools available. When food supplies eventually run out, your solution is to grow your own food and barter tool. Now, for a short time, GetSeeds.net offers 100 packets of heirloom non-GMO vegetable seeds for only $59. Pay with 2 ounces of pure silver or just $59. The best price on the net for high-quality seeds. Our GetSeeds.net seeds are open pollinated vegetable seeds sealed in a Mylar bag for long-term storage. Bulk pricing available. So get seeds while you still can at GetSeeds.net or call toll-free 877-341-4769. That's 877-341-4769.
Before you throw away your used batteries, you need to listen to this. Now, going green can save money. Go green and save money by giving life to your used batteries by charging them with the Renaissance Charger. The Renaissance Charger uses a new revolutionary battery charging technology that effectively extends the life of new batteries and gives new life to used batteries. Invented by legendary audio genius John Bedini, this unique and patented charging system rejuvenates the electrochemical plate structure in the battery without additives, increasing capacity and maintaining cell integrity. Renaissance Charge offers a full line of products made in the USA for all types and sizes of batteries. Find out why our customers tell us the Renaissance Charger is the only battery charger they will ever use. Save your money. Save the environment. Visit us online at r-charge.com. That's r-charge.com or call us at 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514. Be a part of the revolution today.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
On the Paracast with Gene Steinberg and our co-host Chris O'Brien, we welcome back someone who was on the show a year or two back, and he's incredibly talented as a musician. He's also a paranormal investigator, has a publication called Grailian Report, is involved in radio and all that stuff. But Micah Hanks, we got a note from you here about new research into Mothman. Now, I kind of thought that was, you know, the issue, the Silver Bridge and all that stuff. It already happened. We had the movie there with, of course, Richard Gere playing a compendium of characters, including John Keel, whom he called Klein.
Right.
Okay. So what led you to go back into Mothman? What's going on here?
Yes, back into a foray into the Mothman world. You know, first of all, I'll kind of say that Mothman has been something that has fascinated me for more than a decade, if not, oh gosh, you know, my entire life, since I was old enough to be conscious of there being things that were, well, maybe beyond what we typically call conscious. The Mothman, of course, is this winged, some people call it a cryptozoological thing, some people call it interdimensional, which is, I think that was the term that John Keel actually preferred, who authored the book The Mothman Prophecies, that was the impetus for that film you mentioned there. I loved the film, by the way. I had to go see that one in the theaters when it came out. But the interesting thing about Mothman to me is that it is really this kind of a singular thing. You know, you have reports of Bigfoot here in the United States and the Almas or the Yeti and things like that, Yeren, Yowie, all around the other parts of the world. In other words, there are anthropomorphic looking ape creatures seen virtually everywhere throughout the world. This lends people to think that maybe we're looking at either some sort of a psychological or maybe even in a Jungian psychological sense archetypal sort of phenomenon, or that there are truly anthropomorphic ape creatures that are just similar enough to humans that have existed on the fringes of society and live dispersed throughout parts of the world. Whereas the Mothman creature, despite a lot of popular reports that claim that these things are seen all around the world at the time disasters occur, a lot of that is really kind of, you know, folklore that has come together as a result of the disaster, the Silver Bridge disaster, being directly associated with the sightings of the creature around Point Pleasant in the late 1960s. That's Point Pleasant, West Virginia. So I've been fascinated by Mothman for a long time because this creature seems to represent almost a singular manifestation of something that at least vaguely appeared humanoid. It had wings, which, according to John Keel and others, were described as being, you know, pretty small comparative to the size of the body. The thing was described as being between maybe 5.5 to 6, maybe 7 feet tall. And yet the wingspan was only 10 feet. And this thing was seen flying in a number of instances. So how in the world does something with a 10-foot wingspan carry a human-like body that's 7 feet tall? So, you know, you begin to look at a lot of these reports and say, you know, that there are things that maybe don't add up. And that initially had always kind of stuck with me. And I thought maybe this is something that literally is able to defy gravity, something interdimensional, something that is able to propel itself through the air in a very non-conventional way. But looking back at a lot of the early reports, you'll notice that even the early witnesses, the two couples that were driving in a car, Scarberry and the Millettes, they had described, I think it appeared in a newspaper called the Pacific Stars and Stripes, that the creature had, quote, been a very awkward runner. And this description of it running was mentioned in conjunction with the thing chasing their car at speeds almost exceeding 100 miles per hour. Now, granted, later on, those witnesses would also say that they did, in fact, see the thing flying behind their vehicle. The subsequent encounter that occurred the next night, in which one of the witnesses was a woman carrying her newborn baby, Tina, she actually dropped the baby because as they pulled up at a friend's house near the very infamous abandoned TNT factory, the creature was seen, apparently it had been lying on the ground. It gets up, its locomotion was described as shuffling, and it gets up and starts walking away. And they're so terrified that the mother drops the little baby, Tina. She's terrified. They get her up, she gets the baby, they get inside the friend's house, and the thing ambles up onto the back porch and stares in the windows at them with these infamous glowing red eyes. In that circumstance, to my knowledge, the creature was never described as having flown. And in a number of the other instances, it was never described as having flown. So rather than to say that Mothman was indeed a wingless creature, and the popular radio program Coast to Coast AM actually linked an article I wrote for Mysterious Universe, the Australian website, about this earlier this week. Rather than to say that truly the Mothman was a wingless creature, what I propose, and this has actually come to find out, digging a little deeper into the literature, I'm not the first to propose this by any means, but I began to think certainly that what we were seeing here were a relative phenomenon in the sense that they were kind of occurring in the same area of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, but they may not have been the same phenomenon. We had a creature that had wings that a few witnesses described, and we had a number of reports of what John Keel would have called an abominable swamp slob. This was kind of his own description of a Bigfoot-type creature. And even John Keel, if you read, I think it was first published as Strange Creatures from Time and Space, later republished as the Complete Guide to Mysterious Beings in the 1990s. If you read in books like that, he even says, it was obvious we were dealing with a minority of reports of some winged being, but that we had an abominable swamp slob that was present in the area as well. So I think it's very clear that maybe there were a variety of things occurring around Point Pleasant. Not all of them were the conventional Mothman that we've taken to heart.
Do you think that maybe researchers went in there and they kind of mixed them all together into one mishmash?
I think the important thing to address here is that that occurs very often in the study of Fortiana and the unexplained. And, you know, and I'm just as guilty of that as anyone. You know, I hear about people talking about, you know, what if we take all this weird phenomenon and let's put it all together in a great big pot and stir it together and see what we get. Let's see how interrelated all this stuff really is. And I hear, and it may not always be wrong to follow that logic that, you know, well, we hear about Bigfoot reports in conjunction with UFO sightings, so maybe Bigfoot is an alien. Or we hear about UFO sightings in conjunction with, you know, the appearances of ghosts in haunted houses, so maybe ghosts are also some sort of a, you know, interdimensional or extraterrestrial phenomenon. In fact, I wrote an article for Fate magazine a few years ago about that. I think it was called Ghostly Respectors. New receptors, new parallels between ghosts and UFOs. But the point is that I don't think that it's always healthy to, even if you want to draw, you know, distinct parallels between phenomena, you don't always want to say that they are necessarily interrelated. The reason why is because if you say that, for instance, in Point Pleasant, if a creature is being seen, if you say that every one of those creatures, because somebody saw a quote-unquote Mothman, which we know actually from studying the literature, it didn't resemble a moth at all. That was a term that the press gave it.
Back in the early days of the UFO mystery.
Oh, yeah, flying saucer.
Arnold said saucers skipping across water to describe the motion of what he saw, which were, what, crescent-shaped?
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's flying saucers.
Exactly. Of course, you know, regardless of the fact that we have flying cylinders, flying orbs, flying triangles, every other kind of everything, for the longest time, any UFO was referred to, even if they were just a glob of light, they were referred to as saucers. So, again, you know, we have this, well, you know, let's point that out first. The press infers this quote-unquote Mothman creature because something with wings was seen. There were a lot of reports of anomalous large birds in the Point Pleasant, West Virginia area around the time of these sightings. And then maybe we could say everything else was, a terrestrial phenomenon, something kind of like a Bigfoot. It gets lumped in. And I think what we learn from this is that you do have to be careful when you just say that, you know, we're going to generalize and everything seen in this area because one thing might have had wings is a Mothman. That may not be the case at all.
We want to reduce everything to sound bites. We want to make everything as simple as possible to understand. We want the Reader's Digest version. That doesn't always work. We have Micah Hanks. His publication is called The Graylian Report, and I have to ask him to explain to our listeners what is a Graylian, and can I buy one? Can I watch one on TV? Can I take home an action figure, a Graylian action figure? There's a idea for merchandising.
Tell me about it.
Okay. Co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, neighbors. Meetings are an essential part of any business. You know, making presentations to clients, collaborating with your colleagues. Well, make them as simple as possible to run and organize. Use GoToMeeting by Citrix, the easiest, most reliable online meeting service. With GoToMeeting, you can schedule an online meeting in seconds. Attendees can join with just a click from anywhere. Meeting materials are viewed on everyone's screen, making collaboration seamless. GoToMeeting is so easy to use for you and everyone joining your meeting. Plus, with GoToMeeting, hold as many meetings as you can for one flat rate. You have phone conferencing and voice over IP are included. You know, my listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days, a month of unlimited online meetings free. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and enter the promo code PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com, promo code PODCAST.
Reality check. There are many so-called health products coming out that are here today but will be gone tomorrow. They're fads, they're hype, and a lot of gimmick. Life Change Tea is no fad. We've been around for years and we've been slowly growing, and our products have attracted loyal customers. Why? Because our products work. Cleansing your body, losing weight, more energy, and better overall health. And you might ask, says who? Our customers say. A company shows its colors with how many people reorder the product. So don't be afraid. We're the real deal. Log on to GetTheTea.com and read all the testimonies. In fact, log on and order at GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Or call us at 928- 928-308-0408. There's no call centers, just a friendly operator. 928-308-0408. Once again, 928-308-0408.
The U.S. economy is at a tipping point. 40 cents of every dollar the government spends is borrowed. The president of the Federal Reserve in Dallas was recently quoted saying, "This path will lead to insolvency, resulting in the collapse of our government and our economy. Our country can't function like this, and neither can your household. That's why you need to prepare, and priority one is your food supply. Fortunately, it's easy and affordable with the help of Ready Reserve Foods. Ready Reserve Foods has been a premier supplier of long-term storable foods for 37 years. Their unique process assures the highest quality long-term food storage available. With a 25-year shelf life, a full year supply of quality food for two people costs a fraction of what you pay at the grocery store. For a free, full-color catalog, call 800-453-2202. That's 800-453-2202. Or visit ReadyReserveFoods.com. Ready Reserve Foods, making preparedness simple since 1972.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic, and as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable, patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver. That's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver. UtopiaSilver.com or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338. UtopiaSilver.com. Taking back America's healthcare one American at a time.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We have Chris O'Brien as the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. Micah Hanks joining us. And before we go back to the mysteries surrounding Mothman and maybe some of the new revelations about the enigma to increase our understanding, Graelian, what is a Graelian?
Good question. That's the million-dollar question right there. A Graelian is actually, in truth, a portmanteau I created. We hear about gray aliens, and what's really funny is if you look at the graelianreport.com, we have, you know, a green alien, so it's not truly an alien gray in terms of color and accuracy.
So it's the Graelian report, but Graelian doesn't sound as good as Graelian.
Exactly, yeah. Technically, he'd be a Graelian, wouldn't he? But, you know, the idea is that you have these reports of gray aliens, and so and what's funny is when I created the word Graelian, there are so many folks who say gray alien, they can't pronounce Graelian, but yes, it is Graelian report. And, you know, he's a character. He's a mascot of sorts. I mean, I don't just talk about aliens and UFOs and things at the website. As a matter of fact, if anything, if I went down in history as being known as anything, I would like to be remembered as probably a folklorist, because, you know, so much of the uncanny and the unexplained and the strange that we deal with in these reports and this brand of research, it crosses cultural parallels, things that we've dealt with for, you know, hundreds of thousands of years, that exceed our time here on this planet. You know, we can look at very case studies of things that occur right here, right now. Or we could look at the longer progression of thought and folklore and mysterious happenings and things like that, strange beings and creatures throughout history. So, not to infer when I say folklore that these things don't exist, but I think that, you know, looking at the accumulation of studies of the strange, you know, throughout history, I like that expression. And, you know, even Jacques Vallée and others have used that too.
All right, let's go back to Mothman. So Mothman is Mothmen, Mothwomen, and all sorts of strange creatures that were put into one bag.
Yeah. quite possibly. We have these, these reports of what very well may have been, a terrestrial, a ground-based cryptozoological creature, something along the lines of a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch. And I have to actually jump in here and say real quick, Chris certainly would know a good bit about this, because this has to be none other than Chris O'Brien, who authored Stalking the Tricksters. Am I correct?
Yeah.
That's right, Chris. Yeah, so I've known you for years, and I was just reading your book the other day and enjoying the many parallels that look at this sort of stuff in that book as well. And we see that, again, these sorts of creatures, Bigfoot, if you read Chris's book, or if you study, what I put up on the Kraelian Report and other places, these things are seen all over the place. I don't know exactly why that is. Are we dealing with a physical phenomenon when I'm talking about a Bigfoot-type creature or an abominable swamp slob? and I'll
Swamp booger.
A swamp booger, yeah, all these things. Skunk apes. We have different regional names for these creatures. Is it something that is literally representative of physical creatures seen throughout the United States and, frankly, throughout, the entire populated world? I've wondered sometimes if it is indeed entirely that. And I think that the reason why, because the thing is that there is, despite what many cynics and skeptics would tell you, there is a remarkable amount of physical evidence that supports the notion that something is occurring. I think that you can't fault folks like Jeffrey Meldrum and some of the better-known cryptozoologists in academia, who go after these things for anything perhaps but being passionate about what they go after. And they're certainly, enlivened by the thought that there might be something out there. And what happens to them? They're criticized, and the rest of academia criticizes them and says, you're crazy. You're talking about fairy tales here and you're trying to treat it like it's something real. You're going to lose your job. You're risking reputation. All these things. Nonetheless, these things are seen all over the place. Maybe then Point Pleasant was no different. Since we have these reports of the Ohio Grassman and things like that, another regional term for a Bigfoot-type creature in the area, it seems very likely, based on the witness descriptions, that that there was some sort of a bipedal, maybe even ape-like creature that was being seen in the area around the time of the Mothman sightings.
Let me ask you, though, is it possible that the disaster, the Silver Bridge disaster, is what brings so much attention to Mothman? Otherwise, it'd just be another anomalous thing.
There's a good point to be made there. First of all, I don't think that the Silver Bridge collapse was directly in terms of anything other than maybe just, it was serendipitous or synchronistic that, a disaster, and frankly, not just a disaster, one of the single greatest, one of the single greatest accidents in American infrastructure that occurred during the 20th century. I mean, the collapse of the Silver Bridge was singular in the sense that it caused us to really look at infrastructure, bridges, buildings, and things, and we had to say, listen, we can't have this kind of thing occurring again. And I have friends from the Marietta, Ohio, and Point Pleasant, West Virginia, Gallipoli areas there, those towns and everything. They remember when that actually occurred, and they said that it was just a dark Christmas for everyone. It was terrible. So naturally, if there are reports of some sort of a mysterious being or a creature being seen in that area, people are going to infer, as John Keel did, that something, had happened, and that maybe the creature's presence was kind of an omen. It was indicative of something terrible to come. But personally, I don't know that, aside from the fact that, hey, something was seen and then a disaster occurred, I don't know that if we could look at it empirically and say, well, yes, obviously, the creature was responsible for that. And frankly, I think that Mothman's gotten a bad rap as a result of that. I think he's been blamed with something that he, she, it, whatever it was, if there ever was one, may not have had anything to do with that. But it has certainly kind of kept it on the Fortean record as an exemplary example of what I call a Fortean folk devil, and if you look throughout history and instances where reports of strange creatures are reported, many times people associate them with bad luck, whether it be, Jason Offutt talking about black-eyed children. If you hear about what's called Walking Sam, this is very interesting, this one. Walking Sam, according to cryptozoologists, many refer to as kind of a colloquial term for Bigfoot in the American Southwest among some of the Native American tribes. Walking Sam is, to the contrary, described as being, often clothed, wearing a stovepipe hat, and being between 12 and 15 feet tall. He peers in windows at night, kind of like the Mad Gasser of, was it Mattoon, I think? We also can associate that with Spring-Heeled Jack and some of these characters and things like that, these creeps that peer in windows. This Walking Sam entity is much the same sort of thing, and the Native traditions traditions hold that when this creature or this being appears, he appears in conjunction with teen suicides and things like that. So a lot of the time, 4TN creatures, monsters, strange beings are associated with bad luck. But does that necessarily mean that they actually cause disasters? I don't know that we have the evidence to support that.
You ever wonder, though, in some cases, maybe it is teenagers who are just playing pranks, peering in windows, wearing masks, just
most
to
certainly
scare up their friends?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, that has to happen, you know. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, I used to, you know, my friends and I, we'd dress like goblins and run around the neighborhood. And in fact, there's a funny story.
And he still does it, by the way. I want to mention that.
I dress like a Graylian now, though, guys, you know. But when I was just getting started in my paranormal research, you know, I do believe I'm one of these people who's a proponent like Chris is or Eugene, but I think that, you know, you need to get out there, and if you can be, to some degree, you should be involved in field research, you know, as opposed to just pouring through, you know, information and the like that's, you know, gathered in books and on the internet. By the same token, I think that people who are armchair researchers, as they call them, are given a bad rap, because you have to have both the people who are out there who are digging through the field and cutting through the brush looking for evidence, and also the people who are academics and who are willing to go and look through microfilm and look through books and, you know, internet archives, you know, spend late nights in university libraries like I do, looking up, you know, Eberhardt's 4TN mystery catalog or whatever, or Jerry Clark's books on UFO catalogs and things. But the point I'm getting at here is that when I was younger, before I began to take a more scholarly kind of, you know, and even a folkloric approach, as I've said, to this sort of study, sure, I wanted to get out there and I wanted to go ghost hunting and things like that. And I always tried to present myself well when I did so. And there's a well-known ghost here in Asheville, North Carolina, where I live. It's called the Pink Lady, and she's said to haunt the historic Grove Park Inn Resort and Spa, which is, if you've never been to Asheville and you do plan to visit, try and stay at the Grove Park Inn. It's a remarkable place, and it's allegedly haunted by many ghosts, but when I would go visit...
Mini ghost is supposed to maxi ghost, or a mini me is a ghost. All right,
right,
I'll get into this in a moment.
Sure.
Micah Hanks joining us. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter, and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Freedom, the blistering anti-globalist anthem from the rock band Ravelin.
Back in thrones have their doom. Slakes you build Lindsay with the moon.
Just one of 11 great songs from the album Under the Sun. Available on iTunes and at Ravelin.com. RAVisionVictory, ELYN, Ravelin.com.
Spring and a new growing season are here. Plan a healthy garden easy and fast with Organicaseed.com. Easy because Organicaseed.com offers one of the largest online selections of organic, heirloom, non-hybrid, and untreated seeds, as well as tobacco and cotton seeds at low prices. Go to Organicaseed.com, spelled O-R-G-A-N-I-C-A-Seed.com. Organicaseed.com. Remember, Organicaseed is healthy seed.
Never buy home canning jar lids again.
No kidding. When you buy Tadler reusable canning lids once, you'll never buy canning lids ever again. Safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways containing BPA. But Tadler reusable canning lids are guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning. Tadler lids are made with a USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, safe for direct food contact, and contain no BPA. Tadler lids are dishwasher safe, usable with standard pressure or water bath canning, eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion, fit standard mason jars, are indefinitely reusable, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders at reusablecanninglids.com or call 1-877-747-2793, 877-747-2793. Call 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com for Tadler reusable canning lids. The original since 1976.
Will I have garlic breath after I take Ali-C?
We get that question all the time about the world's best garlic extract, Ali-C. And the answer is, Ali-C contains stabilized allicin, nature's antimicrobial agent, and the active ingredient in crushed garlic, but will not give you garlic breath. Scientifically proven in double-blind studies, using low doses of allicin greatly reduces the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Our powerful Ali-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin. Just one tablet of Ali-C is equivalent to 40 garlic cloves. It's effective against asthma, MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections, and helps lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Plus, it's a natural mosquito repellent. Boosts resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Ali-C. For more information and to order Ali-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 877-888-7126 or garlichealthproducts.com. Fight back with Ali-C.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Music from our guest, Micah Hanks. He is publisher of The Graylin Report, writes books, does radio shows, and carries on about strange creatures of the day, of the night, of the weekend, during the week, and all that stuff. Chris, please pick up on the questioning.
Well, Micah, you were talking about a particular spot there in Asheville. Why don't you give us a description, just a brief history of this aberration, and your experience, I guess, as a new investigator. Was this one of your first cases that you attempted to investigate? Or?
Yeah, it certainly was because it was available to me. You know, I think that most people who begin this kind of research start getting involved in investigations of phenomenon that occurs in their general locale. We have a number of interesting legends about ghosts seen in the area. The first, of course, and that's what I was talking about before the last break, was the Pink Lady of the Grove Park Inn. And actually, to go back to something Gene had asked about during the last segment, he'd asked if I thought that reports of strange phenomena sometimes were maybe accountable in terms of, you know, pranksters and teenagers putting on masks and peering in windows and things. When I began my research at Grove Park Inn years ago, before I'd even met my good friend, and a few people do actually know this, he's my fourth cousin, Joshua P. Warren, who also lives here in Asheville. Joshua probably is the most prolific researcher to have studied the Pink Lady, but before I even met Joshua, and that case arguably actually is the very one, the study of that manifestation there at the Grove Park Inn, that was the one that probably brought Joshua and I together and into one another's realm of knowledge and hence, you know, years and years of working together, studying this sort of stuff off and on. But Joshua had written about it in a book called Haunted Asheville, and so naturally I would go up to Grove Park Inn and I would ask questions. I gathered a number of fascinating stories over the years from talking with people, and I would always wear a black suit, you know, a white shirt and a black tie. Sometimes I'd also wear an earpiece because when I would go throughout the hotel, I'd have friends, you know, who'd have walkie-talkies and things like that, and they'd be in another part of the hotel, but we didn't want to be walking around and being so obvious about the fact that we had walkie-talkies and that we were trying to kind of triangulate our efforts in various parts of the building. So, you know, I'd wear an earpiece, and of course, thinking that I wasn't going to stand out like a sore thumb, here I am dressed like an MIB. When I met Joshua years later, I was told of reports where people had said that they had seen MIBs lurking around the Grove Park Inn questioning people about the ghost. Yeah, so I was a Fortean phenomenon all to myself, and I didn't even know it.
I got busted. I was flying around videotaping in a two-man dark purple helicopter, and I ended up actually being able to fly the thing back to Crestone, a little town where we had, you know, where I live and where we had taken off from. And, you know, the pilot says, oh, yeah, you can go ahead and fly here. Just don't touch the pedals. Go ahead, have some fun. So I started swooping down and bothering some cattle herds. And the next day I found out in an article in the Rocky Mountain News that the sheriff and a deputy were chasing across the valley after this mysterious black helicopter that was harassing cattle.
Oh, yeah.
I can identify with you.
Well, that's the funny thing is that when we put ourselves out there, we throw ourselves to the belly of the whale, so to speak. A lot of the time, you know, you can end up blurring the boundaries between, you know, what you're studying and of course, you know, what's how you're perceived as in relation to that phenomenon. So, but getting back to the Pink Lady, the story is very typical. You know, there was a damsel who, you know, there are various theories about her origin. You know, one that I think she was a lady of the night, one that she was a mistress of the author F. Scott Fitzgerald, who had stayed and frequented, frankly, the Grove Park Inn. Some actually say that the Pink Lady was actually the former wife of F. Scott Fitzgerald, Zelda Fitzgerald. And there are just a number of different stories to that origin, which, again, you know, I see that there's a folkloric aspect here. You know, a story is woven around this character to the point that I'd begun to think that maybe there was no ghost at all and that maybe it was a colorful story that was kind of, you know, perpetrated around the property. And maybe not with malicious intent or intent just to try and capitalize on there being a ghost. But, you know, over time, people tell stories and things, and there was more of a legend than there was any fact based around it. And then one night I was up there at the Grove Park Inn, and I had a couple of friends with me who had some fantastic cameras. We'd been going around, and we'd been taking photos throughout the building and just kind of, you know, having an evening up there walking around. I think we'd, you know, gotten a glass of iced tea, and we were just taking our time and strolling around. Well, the power goes out, and this is a very, very, very large building, I have to say, the Grove Park Inn. So here we are. The power goes out, and we're right up there outside room 545, which is so often associated with this mysterious Pink Lady. A little woman steps out of the room adjacent to 545, and she says, oh, you guys look like ghost hunters. And I said, yes, ma'am, we certainly are. She told us that she was visiting from that. Now, her accent seemed to be obviously foreign, but she lived in Texas at the time, and she was with a group. They had visited North Carolina on a business trip, and she said, I have a strange ghost story I have to tell you about this room right next door to us. Now, we hadn't approached her and said, You know, that room right there is associated with this hotel's most famous ghost. So she comes out and she tells us, I have this ghost story about this room next door. I've got to tell you guys. And we said, do tell. And we sit down. She offers us chocolate dipped strawberries. And we're sitting there in the dark. I think we might have had a candle. And she begins to tell us that the fellow who'd been staying in the room came to breakfast that morning. You know, he looked like he hadn't shaved. He just looked like he hadn't slept the night before. And they asked him, they said, Tom, what happened? What's going on? And he says, well, nobody would believe me, but I might as well tell you since you ask. I woke up in the middle of the night and I had tremendous pressure on my chest. I couldn't breathe. I was just having a devil of a time. And I woke up with this pressure on my chest. And the first thing I see are these ruffles of pink. And I look up into the face of a woman sitting on my chest. And she's gaunt. She has long silver hair. And she's just looking down at me. I'm thinking to myself, what in the world? You know, who is this person? She's obviously mental and has broken into my room. Here it is almost 3 o'clock in the morning. Before I could even say anything, the weight is lifted off my chest and she literally vanishes right there. Now, what's interesting about this case is that, to my knowledge, this fella had not known in advance that he was staying in a room associated with this ghost, nor did he have knowledge, to the best of my ability, to ask the person telling me this at the time, nor did he have knowledge of there being a Pink Lady at the Grove Park Inn. However, he stayed the night in the room. He had this experience, and this experience with the weight on the chest and waking up and seeing an entity in the room with you is remarkably similar to, you know, in instances where sleep paralysis occurs or, you know, devil riding your back, night hag, this sort of phenomenon. So I thought that was very interesting that, you know, of all things this man would occur, he sees a woman who Interestingly, with the gaunt face, the long silver hair, that does not match the description of the Pink Lady. She's typically described as being a young woman with, you know, golden hair, or sometimes she's a brunette, but either way, she's a young, very attractive woman in a pink gown. The pink ruffled dress was there, but this was an older-looking woman, and she was indeed sitting on his chest, just like in a number of instances with sleep paralysis. So that got me thinking that maybe there was something more to the reports of this ghost seen there at the Grove Park Inn. And indeed, you know, if you dig through the literature, there are a number of reports like that that don't just occur in that room, but occur throughout the hotel with a similar apparition.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point there, Mike. I too have you know, investigated cases where you have a semblance of what you have associated with a particular phenomenon. You have a kind of a resemblance there, but then there is that personal bias that comes in terms of the actual experience. And it tends to, I think, have hints, like you have just mentioned. It was a very good illustration of this point. You have hints of what has been reported prior, but then there's this slant. There's this personal bias thing going on there. And I think in haunted site investigations, one of the really good things about them, I think, is because they're not like UFOs. You don't have to go out chasing around hoping that they'll appear. You're dealing with a location-specific scenario. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think haunted site investigations could be a real shortcut, I think, for people who are interested in establishing scientific data around paranormal-type events. I think it's good that people are getting out there, but one of the things that is a problem, I think, is you have a lot of weekend warriors out there that are going out there, and I just posted on the forum.paracast.com, our great forum boards, a story about some ghost hunters in England that actually got scared out of a haunted site because they got up close and personal with something that I guess they weren't prepared for, and they ended up screaming from the building. So it's kind of a careful what you wish for scenario, I think, as well. So I think people need to undergo at least, you know, basic training on how to properly conduct an investigation. And I think state of mind, attitude, you know, a sense of objectivity, and, you know, you have to not be easily shaken, or you have to be unflappable to a certain degree.
We're getting flappable now. We're very unflappable right now. We're not going to flap around because we got to do this
like
break.
Like Mothman.
Exactly.
Mothman doesn't flap.
It will be a flop if we flap. We want to hear from you. Yes, we do. If you have a comment or a question about the PowerCast, write us. news@theparacast.com. Once again, news@theparacast.com. We read every single message we get. We have Micah Hanks. I'm Gene Steinberg. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. You're in
the PowerCast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.